Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Speak your mind. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
All right, 303, McMonagle here with you on the Fan. 888-808-1019. I got you for another 2 hours. We take it until 5 o'clock in the warm-up show. We'll get into the basketball in a little bit. The Knicks have added another assistant coach who has a little bit of NBA coaching experience to the search, as Nico Harrison has made a statement on Jason Kidd. We'll get to that. The Nets take all 5 picks. Hard to see the vision there. I'll get to that. But we're starting with the baseball, as both teams in desperate need of victories were led by their stars, led by their big season, offseason rather, acquisitions. Led by guys who are the stars of this team and need to produce if you're going to win. And Soto's been doing it for a month, and we really haven't talked about it. Like, and that's why tonight it feels like worthy of talking about, because the Mets and their struggles have kind of, not that we haven't noticed what's going on, not that we're not aware that Juan Soto's having a great month and that he's been far, far better and that he's turning back into himself. We've all been aware of it. The problem has been he's been doing it for the most part while the team is in their biggest slump in a year. So we haven't had a chance to really enjoy it because it's come along with a free fall and blowing a 5.5-game division lead. And last night, considering the multi-home runs, considering the record for the youngest, you know, the most multi-home runs at a player under 27, now planting Jimmy Fox, and the idea that, you know, they won a much-needed game, the offense broke out a little bit, scored a couple runs. Unfortunately, they do bring in the kid at the end, and it forces Diaz to have to come into this game. But that's small potatoes next to actually winning a baseball game, watching the offense play, watching Mauricio hit a home run. And that's going to be a conversation here, too, with Mauricio, because they've announced that Vientos is coming back today. I don't know if he'll be in the lineup today, but he's coming back today. And what the Mets are going to do is really interesting, because I do think Mauricio could benefit from going down to AAA. I think he's looked overmatched at times. He had a good game yesterday, a couple hits, and obviously the home run. I think it was three hits and the home run. And we see his immense power, and you would like to have that a little bit more seasoned and get some more at-bats down in AAA, because he looks overmatched at times. But I don't know the purpose Young serves on this team. And Mauricio can be your backup shortstop. He can play second base. He can play third base. He's got power. Like, at least I could see a role for Mauricio on this team. I don't know what Young is still doing on this team. So it's going to be very interesting to see what the Mets do when Vientos is put back on the roster later today. 888-808-1019. We can get into that as well. Taking your calls, 888-808-1019. You can call me on the NBA stuff. We'll get to it. But feel free to call. And right now we're taking your baseball calls. Let's get to Jeff in Fort Lee. What's up, Jeff?
Chris, what's good, my guy?
What's up, brother? How are you?
We'll talk Knicks when they finally make a coaching decision in 2 years.
Nice.
So, yeah. Listen, on Soto, I was dead wrong. I thought he was going to be a flop just because the contract, the expectations were going to be too high. But the guy's a stud. And I don't usually do this because I'm usually a very tough marker when it comes to putting guys into the Hall of Fame. Yeah. But I'm exceedingly tough as a tough marker. But Soto's the guy. Like, I guess I don't know if his experience with the Nationals would put him in as a National, but I assume for 15 years, if he serves even just 10 years of that with the Mets,
correct,
that should give him enough time to go into the Hall as a Met. Lindor would most likely go into the Hall of Fame also, probably. So the Mets Lindor have a nice
has,
little...
Lindor has a chance at the Hall of Fame, absolutely.
And I don't know. So we talked about Soto, Lindor. I'm a little up in the air about Alonso. I don't know what you think about him as...
As far as just the Hall of Fame conversation?
Well, in terms of bringing him back, I know that you've discussed it at great length about since he won't have a qualifying offer attached to him, he'll most likely go somewhere else. He's very inconsistent. I would be very okay with putting maybe Vientos at first.
Yeah. Well,
and you save some money there. Not that it's a big deal, but, you know, it's still money. And I would put Vientos at first and, you know, figure out the rest of the infield. And because Alonso is very streaky. I don't know what you think.
Yeah, well, and thank you for the call, Jeff. I've been saying this for a while, and I was even saying it while he was killing it. And it's not that I like Pete, and I was a proponent of signing Pete all offseason. I was getting on the Mets for not doing it. I was riding the roller coaster every day. Unfortunately, it's part of what we do here. I was riding the roller coaster every day of every report and this and that. And, you know, they don't want him. He's going to, you know how I felt if you listen to the show. I wanted them to sign Pete. I thought they were, I knew the contract was going to come down, but I still thought they were kind of lowballing him. And eventually they got their man. They gave him the $30 million when they probably didn't even have to. He wanted to go nowhere else. And he also had less of a market because it made more sense to the Mets than anyone else, because you would have to lose a pick. And really, nobody was after this guy. Now, he doesn't have that pick. Now, we've seen a first baseman get a large contract, and he's having a good year. And I said this from the beginning. The better Pete plays, the less likely I am inclined to think he's going to be a Met, because I don't know how Stearns views it. And to your point, you are talking about a guy now on the wrong side of 30, right? On the wrong side of 30, who is a streaky hitter, who right now, let's be honest, his home run, everything else is up. His home run numbers are down this year. We'll see. He's got 18 now, you know, after a miserable start to the year, Soto's caught him in home runs. He's not even on pace for 40 right now. And he's going through a pretty big slump here. We have to see where it goes, but like, I could just see, and I've been saying this whole time, and I don't want to put a damper on the Met win, but I do think that it is, to me, it's not a slam dunk unless the owner just feels like, hey, he's too good. He's our guy. The fans do love him. We got booed, or, you know, at least the idea of not signing Pete got booed at the Met day or whatever. Like, I there's no reason not to sign him. I have the money. Let's just go do it. Unless he's adamant about that, which I do think there is a strong possibility that that will be the case, if he lets David Stearns make the decision, I think there's a very good chance that Pete Alonso is not on the team. I think there's a very good chance they don't sign him. I think David Stearns will look at him and say, we got the best of him. We gave him $30 million for 1 year. We chased a championship with it, maybe even found one. Let's see, you know.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Knock on wood. But whatever the case may be, he's on the wrong side of 30. I don't see him getting better than this. How much money do we want to put into a long-term aging first baseman when we could use that position with Vientos or Beatty and move guys around, or, you know, just get, you know, a different option at that position where you can go a little bit cheaper than Pete Alonso? Because if Pete Alonso does hit 40 home runs, if Pete Alonso has another good year, which he's on his way to having, obviously, I think the money could get big, and I think the years could get bigger than what would be David Stearns' appetite for a contract for Pete Alonso. I think it gets dicey, and that's why I said a couple weeks ago I would approach Pete Alonso now. And right now I'd approach him. He's slumping. He loves this team. I would talk to him right now and say, hey, let's make a fair deal for the both of us. And see if he'd take it. Because I'm telling you, first base feels different now with the Vladimir Guerrero contract. I don't know if that's the case or not. Maybe I'm reading too much into one player getting money from a desperate organization who couldn't get anybody to take their money. Maybe I'm reading too much into that, but it feels like Pete got 30. He gets the big contract. It feels like maybe first base is starting to be valued different. The first baseman from Japan is poised to hit free agency and have a big contract. Plus, you don't have to, and now he's proving he's a steady, reliable guy for power. I just think they can get a contract, or Pete could get a contract that would make the Mets go, I don't know, and make David Stearns think we're better off with roster flexibility. But as far as the Hall of Fame conversation on Pete Alonso goes, I think obviously Soto is a Hall of Famer. He would have to have a bad run at the last. I mean, I think he's already a champion. He's one of the great young players ever. It'd be nice to win an MVP or two to bolster that Hall of Fame credential. But I don't think there's any doubt. If he has anywhere near the season, if he just has a normal Juan Soto season, or even, 80% of a normal Juan Soto season again for the next 7 or 8 years, you're looking at a Hall of Famer. There's almost no doubt. And I think if he does it for that long in a Met uniform and breaks some records in a Met uniform, hits some milestones rather in a Mets uniform, I think he probably goes in as a Met. Lindor probably been here a lot. If he wins a championship, which he didn't win in Cleveland, certainly you could see him in a Met uniform. Pete Alonso is going to be interesting. I wonder if it's going to start to come, because we've seen guys who hit 500 home runs, and not necessarily, they've kind of had steroid tainted to their name, some of them. Gary Sheffield's not in with 500 home runs. I'm trying to think. It's 500 was viewed as an automatic. Now, I don't know if Pete even gets the 500, but I think he has an opportunity to. If he really, can continue to hit home runs here, it depends on how they view him. I don't know if Pete's a Hall of Famer. He's very, very good. He's very, very good. He unfortunately, Lindor is also a platinum glove winner. Now, I know it's been an issue with his defense this year, and he's made a lot more errors than he has at any point in his career. But he's still an excellent defender, has been an excellent defender. And for shortstops, his offense is really good. A first baseman who's, good around the bag, has a throwing issue, hits a lot of home runs, doesn't do much else. This year he's having a good year with the batting average. This year he's having a good year with other things, but we'll see. I don't know. Pete's up in the air. Pete has an opportunity to be a Hall of Fame type player. He's not a slam dunk, but that's less important than how we feel if Pete Alonso is going to come back next year. And I'm just, to me, if the owner allows David Stearns to make the call on Pete Alonso and he doesn't get emotional and he doesn't say, I don't care, he's got an opportunity to be the best player in a Met uniform, the fans love him, I'm signing Pete, which is, I think, even more than possible, likely. It is likely the owner handles it like that. But for me, if the owner says, hey, you're running this, I trust you implicitly, David, you're running this team, if you think it's a bad idea to sign Pete, I'm with you. If he lets David Stearns make the decision, I think there's a very good chance. In fact, I think most likely he's not a Met next year. I think David Stearns would rather go elsewhere with this roster and go elsewhere with first base as opposed to an above 30, lumbering type guy who I just know in my mind, David Stearns is thinking, we got the best of this dude. He's not going to be this good again. And those are the kind of players that when you come from Milwaukee and you have that mentality and you already have some long-term contracts on the books and you've got some big money on the books and you've got some options and you've got some guys who are younger and you believe in still on some level, I could just see it. I could see it not going that way. But I don't want to poo-poo or dampen the mood off of a great Met win last night, because that's what it was. An impressive win, a big-time play from Jeff McNeil, a big-time game from Juan Soto, another good pitching performance from Clay Holmes, who's been a little bit more, like, Clay Holmes hasn't been bad necessarily at all. He's been still very good, but, you know, he's the last couple games, the walks have gone up, the home runs have gone up. We're going to see about Clay Holmes. I'm very interested to see Clay Holmes in the second half of the year. As Frankie Montas has come back and was great in his one start, as you're still waiting for Kodai Senga, and that sounds like hopefully that could be relatively soon. He's throwing. He says he feels great. We don't know what the loose body in Manaea's elbow is going to be or how much longer you're waiting for him, but he's coming back. I would just say I'm a little nervous, not overly concerned, but a little nervous, and we're going to stand to see how it goes with Clay Holmes moving forward, only because of two things. One, the obvious. It's a lot of innings for a dude who hasn't thrown a lot of innings. I mean, that's just the plain truth of it all. He's been a reliever for the last 5 years, 6 years of his career. He's already surpassed the most innings he's thrown in his career, and it's June. I mean, they got a long way to go. And right now, he's pitched well enough to be a postseason pitcher. So, I mean, you got to ride him all the way to October. That's going to be an interesting path, considering the huge jump in innings. And then the other thing is, even when he was at his best with the New York Yankees, and again, different organization, different role, obviously, as starter compared to reliever. But Clay Holmes was a two-time All-Star. And Clay Holmes was, you know, really good in the first half. And whenever he did falter, it typically happened in the second half of the season. He had some great first halves, 22. In 2022, he was the best reliever in all of baseball for the first half of the year. He was as good as it comes. He was the best in all of baseball, and then had moments where he really struggled. And we all know what happened in the second half of last year. He lost his closer role. So I'm a little interested to see how the second half plays out for Clay Holmes. But already we're seeing a little bit, still very good, still locating all his pitches. I'm still amazed with the transition. I think he's done an incredible job. But walks are a little bit up, and the home runs are starting to come after there were zero in the first 10, 11 starts of the season for him. 888-808-1019. Quick break. We'll come back, talk a little basketball maybe, still take your baseball calls off of two good wins for the Yankees and Mets. Still some of the same issues with the Yankees, which we could talk about. And again, Aaron Boone, I'm telling you right now, we're all going to be pissed later today after four hits from Jason Dominguez. He's going to sit him again, and it's going to bother all of us. 888-8, why the hell, why, oh why, is Jason Dominguez off today?
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Service is not available in all areas.
Don't get it.
Catch all the play-by-play with Susan Waldman and Dave Sims on the home of Yankees Radio, The Fan.
All right. Mick Monagle here with you. 326 on The Fan. 888-808-1019. Before we get into the basketball, which I will hear in a second, let's take Stuart in Brooklyn as he's wanted to make a Yankee call as per usual. So we'll do that. We'll still take your baseball calls. We'll get into the NBA in just a second here. The Knicks head coaching search, Jason Kidd, and, of course, the Nets draft. But, Stuart, what's going on, buddy? How are we feeling?
All right. Chris, hello? Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah, Chris, why joke about Dominguez going down to the minor leagues? What was that?
Excuse me?
Did you say that they were sending Dominguez down?
No, but Boone's giving him off today. Can you believe it? Oh. Four hits, and Boone's going to give him off today.
Do they play today?
No, but I'm sure that Boone had a lot to do with the scheduling, I'm sure. What the hell's going on? Four hits yesterday, and he's not going to play him today? That Aaron Boone, he's such an idiot.
Oh, please. He's such a card. Basically, the threes.
That's right. He's off today. That's why it boggles. You know, amazingly enough, let's see if he can stay hot. Aaron Judge was ruined by an off day in Kansas City. Right. Bellinger had a couple hits yesterday, and everybody's screaming about, oh, how's he not playing today? I don't know. It's a good thing Dominguez played today, no?
I mean,
it's just, it drives me nuts. Every decision, every line, it's so obnoxious. Like, don't you feel this way? Am I the only Yankee fan who feels this way? That it, every lineup that comes out, every decisions that,
I don't need
every
honestly,
swing
just,
and miss, every out on the bases, every, I can't just watch a Yankee game. Everything is somehow, you know, a damnation on the front office.
Is everything
and
being scrutinized, Chris?
Nuts. I can't just watch the game.
Chris, everything is being so scrutinized, with a fine-tooth comb. It's ridiculous. Why don't the people just back off, let them play the games, and after, say, about 3 or 4 weeks, then you can go and scrutinize the 3 or 4 weeks' worth of play and make a decision then what you want to do. But why is it every day we have to hear the same jargon and Brooklyn, Long Island? I don't know how you don't pull your hair out.
Yeah, well, yesterday, I don't know why.
I know, you got on him yesterday,
so,
I heard.
It's so ridiculous to say.
I mean, yeah, give me
I'm
a break.
Not Italian.
You're not Italian. Give me a break. Please, yeah. Brett, just, why don't you just do one thing? Ban him.
I don't want to ban him. I don't like to ban him.
Yeah, but don't you hate aggravates, he gets your blood boiling.
I know. Well, I mean, I don't know. There are people who get a kick out of it, too. I'm trying
I know you get a kick out of it. You know what? Everything the guy says doesn't make any sense.
No, listen, Stu, I appreciate the thought. I understand you're not alone.
Well, I got your back, man.
Of course. Thank you very much. But anything else on the Yankees besides?
Well, it was a good win. I'm glad Max Reed got back on track. And I'm glad that Dominguez got hit four hits along with Trent Grisham. I mean, let's keep it rolling. They have to get back on track. And what are you hearing on Luis Hill?
What am I hearing on Luis Hill? I hear he's going to be an excellent trade. It's going to be like getting a trade acquisition.
When do you think he'll be back? Early July or the end?
No, after the All-Star break. And thank you for the call, Stu. And it doesn't even matter. Honestly, I'm not overly concerned when he comes back. As long as he comes back. As long as he's back in August, it might actually be a blessing in disguise. You know, I know I'm the pie in the sky Yankee shill Yankee fan, but maybe it could be, you know, He kind of got tired last year. Now, it's going to hurt for next year because you want to build up his innings as he goes along here. But it could be a blessing in disguise. His arm will be fresh. He'll be fresh. As long as he comes back by, you know, early August and he has a two-month run-up into the postseason, if he's pitching really well, then I feel good about it. So it doesn't bother me whether it's July or August. I don't think – and it's not like that's what's costing them. It would be one thing if the Yankees were getting beat around the ballpark and their starting pitching was a disaster. We'd be like, okay, come on, we need Luis Hill. They don't need him. They don't need him. I mean, listen, there's a role for him right now. I don't know if Winans is going to start again or whatever the case. So right now they don't have a fifth starter. It's not like they don't need him necessarily. But my point is Max Fried's unbelievable. Carlos Rodon is having a great year and just pitched great again. Clark Schmidt hasn't given up a run in 26 innings. And Will Warren leads all American League, leads all rookies in strikeouts and is pitching relatively well. And I feel pretty good when he's on the mound. I don't know if he'll shut down the opposition, but I feel pretty good. Will Warren's going to give you a representative start. So despite the losing, the Yankees starting pitching has been really good. It might be one of the better stretches they've had all year with the starting pitching. So amazingly enough, that's how bad the offense has been for 2 weeks. But so it's not like Luis Hill needs to get here to stop the bleeding of a bad rotation. Well, you know, the rotation's been really good. If it were an offensive player waiting in the wings, I would be like, oh, they need him back. If Vientos were a Yankee or something like that, then you're desperate to get some offense back. But as long as he's back here in time to get ready, get a build-up, feel good about him getting into the postseason, and August gives him plenty of time to do that, then we'll see if he's a postseason pitcher for them or not. And right now, I feel kind of okay. Like, I'll live. Like I don't. Will Warren looked like he kind of was terrified on the mound in L.A., so that scares me going into a postseason series. But I feel excellent about Fried, and I feel as positive as I possibly could about Carlos Rodon. I know there's still a large portion of this Yankee fan base that can't stand him and doesn't trust him. And I'm certainly skeptical. I'm not a big game. I don't feel like, wow, Carlos Rodon's going to go out there and dominate. But for the most part this year, I mean, with a few exceptions, he's been really good. It's hard not to at least have a little bit of faith in him. And then Clark Schmidt, again, not a world beater, but pitching really well right now, and on ERA under 3. And give me the other teams that the Yankees are going to play with the third starters better than him. Like maybe Seattle, if they face Seattle in a series. You know, Detroit does have some good pitching too, but I'll take my chances with him. So we'll see. Luis Gil coming back, but they're not desperate for that starting pitcher at the moment. So whenever that happens, it happens. Hopefully it will happen soon. Hopefully he feels good. Hopefully he's where he was last year, 2 months in. Like if they can get April and May, Luis Gil last year, the rookie of the year, to pitch into the postseason like that, maybe it's a blessing in disguise that he didn't have the opportunity to pitch all year and get tired. We'll see. It hurts him moving forward, but as far as this year, maybe it's a bonus. So we'll wait on Luis Gil. But the trade deadline has to, you know, and Evan was talking about this. I've talked about this. I think me and Fleegs had a conversation about it on the air, about this trade deadline. It needs to be pushed back. I saw Evan talking about this. I don't understand, like, what's the trepidation? What's the harm? What's the thought process on it? Can't be as late as August 31st. Like, move it back a full month. Why is that a problem? I don't, like, so a guy comes in and plays just a month for a team and gets ready for the postseason. Who, like, I'm fine with that. Now, the value for players is going to go down. You're going to get less of a return for a player that you're selling. And maybe that even opens up the idea that the trade, like I hear BT every, you know, coming back from every other break talking about making trades now. I just don't know if they're out there. But maybe if you move it back to August 31st, you'll start opening up trades before just the deadline. But right now, with the amount of playoff teams in the picture, it's impossible to get a feel for the trade deadline. It's impossible. And both teams are going to need to go out there and make moves. Both teams are going to desperately need to improve themselves. But we talk about this like they need to do it now. There is no doing it now. David Stearns told you as much. What are you going to do now? Teams haven't designated themselves as buyers and sellers. And then even the ones who have, even the ones who've designated themselves sellers, they're going to wait to see if more teams open up as buyers. Like, there's nothing to do. Like, yeah, sure, we all know that the Colorado Rockies aren't winning this year, and if they're going to sell, they'd be willing to sell, you know, today. They don't need to wait until the end of July. You know, the Pittsburgh Pirates probably don't need to wait till the end of July. There's a handful of teams that we know are going to be sellers, but even if you try to contact those teams today, they're going to tell you, why would I do exclusive talks with you when I'm not, you know, another 6 or 7 teams might designate themselves buyers in 3 weeks. Like, it just doesn't make sense. There's no moves to be made. They have a month. The Yankees and Mets, despite winning last night and feeling a little bit better this morning, like, they have a month to figure this out, and nobody's coming to help them. I mean, Vientos is coming back, and hopefully Manaea is coming back. And we were just talking about Luis Gil, but that's probably about a month away. That's probably around the trade deadline. So, like, no one's coming to save the Yankees. No one's coming to save the Mets. This team is presently constituted is going to have to turn this losing streak around and get ready for the deadline in a month. And then I don't even know what those, like, we'll see where it is. I think there's a couple things to talk about with the Yankees. Jazz at third base is an issue. You know, the Mets have their own issues, but, you know, Jazz makes another error last night that cost them a run. And there's a real conversation to be had, you know, when it first happened, and LeMahieu came back, and then Jazz came back from injury, and they pushed him to third after giving him second base to start the year. Like, there's a couple of things about it. One, DJ's just not a good defender right now, and his arm strength is weak. You could see every throw is a lollipop. He tries to get rid of it as soon as possible, or if it's short throws, you know, he makes those. But as the team, unless they're just going to give in to Peraza playing every day, they're going to have a poor defensive player at either second or third. Now, you could make the argument you're hindering two different positions by putting Jazz at third and LeMahieu at second. If you just put Jazz at second, you feel like you've got a good defender there, and you'll live with bad defense at third, where you're hurting both positions by playing it with Jazz at third. And I do think that's an. I'm curious. Jazz is capable of making great plays. He's dealing with a groin injury, so that might be part of the reason his range seems a little bit shorter. But the throws, he's made a couple of really bad throws. And in this one, in this game, if you saw, there was a runner on third base, and he gets a ground ball, and just completely for as a second a runner on second base, I think, and he ends up scoring on the bad throw. Like he just plants on his back foot and makes a he could have stepped into it. He's got a really strong arm. And he made just a terrible throw that cost the Yankees a run, the only run Fried gave up, and it was unearned, obviously. But I'm curious still to this day now why they made this switch. Like I told myself it's because they want Jazz to play third because you don't know what you're going to get at the deadline. But the Yankees are scuffling right now, and they need every out they can get. And if it's just to make DJ LeMahieu comfortable when he's not even playing every game, like, DJ's not even playing every game. And if they're doing this just because he's more comfortable at second base so that he can play, you know, two out of every three games and have a 600 OPS, I don't know if it's, like, if it's, how long does this make sense? Now, the Oswaldo Cabrera injury changed things because they don't have the third baseman or really a better option. Peraza just can't hit. It's proven. But Jazz at third base, as great of an athlete as he is and as capable as he is of making this, you know, stupendous and great play, you could see playing in there every day, there are just some issues. He doesn't throw the ball great from third. There are just some issues with him at third base, and it's not like you're getting LeMahieu to play good at second base. His range is shot. So I wonder if the Yankees are going to start to rethink this. Now, I get it. If the trade deadline is fickle, and if you can only get a middle infielder and you have to play him at second base because like that's how it works, you know, you get someone who's only played second base and you don't want to force that transition on him, you can go get a second baseman and Jazz is available to play third. And you open it up as opposed to saying, I need a third baseman. Now I can look for a third or a middle infielder and adjust. And at least I have someone who's played third base for half the year in Jazz. But in the meantime, while they're struggling here and losing 9 out of 12, they've got liabilities at now second base and third base with Jazz. I mean, he's killing it offensively. He's been great. I think we've already forgotten getting thrown out in yesterday's game. And how about Trevino? How about that? I don't know if you saw that, but Boone mentioned it in the pregame, and then they showed the video on the broadcast. Jazz got thrown out yesterday. If you didn't see that, Jazz argued a strike. Was really animated at home plate. The umpire gave him kind of leeway at home. But then when he came out next inning and was still yapping at third base, the umpire was staring him down. Jazz said, why are you looking at me? And the umpire threw him out of the game. And they showed it on the broadcast today, that former New York Yankee who was coming out to everybody's music to get a laugh. In game one, he has his walk-up music as Judge's music. He's got a big smile on his face. He's laughing. Judge gives him the tip of the cap. And then in Wednesday's game, he comes out to Carlos Rodon's music and kind of has a chuckle, and the two of them are laughing at each other. This is a guy who loved being a Yankee, wanted to be a Yankee, having fun with his former Yankee teammates during these games. And then during the game, he's the one who points and tells the ref that Jazz is still complaining. The umpire's not paying attention. The umpire's looking at the scorecard. The umpire's, you know, daydreaming, thinking about playing golf and going to the pool in this hot weather. And Trevino's like, hey, you know, Jazz is over there still yelling. And that leads to him getting thrown out, and the Yankees aren't happy about it. And like, I get the gamesmanship, and now he's a Cincinnati Red. That's his job. It's his job isn't to make things good for the Yankees. His job is to help the Cincinnati Reds. But that is, if that's not an on-the-field thing, that's just, that's cold, man. For a guy who was, like, having fun, playing music, you know, still wanting to connect to his former Yankee teammates, he's out there trying to get Jazz in trouble? Being a little tattletale? I don't know, man. And, you know, maybe I'm biased for the Yankee. And I get he's a Cincinnati Red. It's about doing what's best for the Reds. I wouldn't expect him to do any favors for the Yankees. It's one, you know, listen, you would, when you say that he's a Red, it's about, it's him having inside knowledge on the team. Like, you know, Judge, you know, does this when he's trying to steal second base, or, you know, look for this, or, you know, we've seen this a lot from, you know, I know DJ LeMahieu well, let's pitch him like this. Like, especially as a catcher, you have inside information about your team. That's all within fair games. But like, Jazz is out there talking to himself and you're like, hey, look at this guy. Look at this guy. I don't know, man. I don't know. Seems messed up. And the Yankees aren't too happy about it. And it would be one thing if he was bitter. Like, if Trevino was bitter he got traded or whatever, I could see it. He's out there having a blast. He's having a good year. He's getting a ton of at-bats because he's pretty much the catcher or the DH. Him and Stevenson for the Reds have been, like, intertwined between DH and catcher. He's having a pretty good year. He's hitting almost 300, I think. They're winning over there. And he's having a blast with his former Yankee teammates, playing music, laughing, tipping caps. And then he's out there being a tattletale? Not a good look for Trevino, I have to admit. I don't know if it's a good look for Trevino. He did get the job done, though. You got to give him that. But even my point is, Jazz hits the home run in this game. Jazz has been incredible. Since he's come back offensively, he has been huge for this team. While Judge is still struggling, Judge with the at-bats in this game, bases, he does have a double that and an RBI double later in the game, but early on, bases loaded. One out. There's Judge striking out, swinging at breaking balls and sliders away. He is still in a funk. I know he hit the home run in the first game of this series, and he does have the RBI double here, and he's still Judge, but man, oh man, he's still in a funk. And if you can remember, look, this year he didn't have a slump at all. Last year, this is 2 weeks. He was bad the entire month of April last year. The entire month of April. This might be even worse than he was for the entire month of April, but like, he's not immune to this. And here's the other thing about it. I'll tell you this. It also makes me feel better about Judge in the postseason. I know that sounds crazy, but I would tell you, and I was thinking about this the last couple days, Judge's struggles right now, whether it be in April last year, and I know the playoffs played out the way they did, but the way Judge is struggling right now and the amount of strikeouts he is racking up, believe it or not, it makes me feel better about Judge as a postseason player. I feel better about Judge with these struggles. And I'll tell you why. Because these games, I know they're struggling, but they weren't. They were coming off a three-game sweep as he headed into Boston, and that's where it started. His struggles have started where the team struggles have been with that series in Boston. The Yankees weren't in a funk at that point. The Yankees weren't in desperation mode. The Yankees weren't having a terrible 10-game stretch. They were coming off sweeping the Royals, and he's been in a funk. These games are games in June. These games don't have a high level of importance. These games are not high-pressured moments. And that's what would scare you about Judge in the postseason. The thing that's scary about Judge in the postseason is that no matter how good he's going, the moment will overcome him. That once he gets in, he'll struggle. That it's the moment. It's trying to carry the team. It's postseason previous failures. It's all of that weighing on him, and that's why he struggles. And the idea that he could still just struggle in June and look this bad, it, to me, a little bit speaks to the idea of Judge's capable of getting in slumps, and when he does, he looks bad. And can have bad at-bats and can go through a stretch where he strikes out a ton. And it doesn't have to be because of the game's importance. It doesn't have to be because of the level of scrutiny of the games. It could just be a bad April. It could just be 2 weeks in June against the Cincinnati Reds. It could just be the idea that he gets into funks. And the point is, he can't be in a funk in the postseason. But if it's no matter how good he's going, the playoffs will change him. That's the fear. The fear is no matter how good he's going, the playoffs will change him. We've also seen a day off lead to this a little bit. To blame Boone for it, to me, is silly. He's going to get a day off. He gets days off. But we also see long layoffs before postseason series, and that's been a thought to it a little bit. So I'm hoping that not be a thing. But Like, to me, it does make me think a little bit like, hey, Judge is just human, and he goes through funks. And if he finds one in the postseason, it takes time for him to get out of it, and it can't happen. I'm not making excuses for his play in the postseason. I don't care, ultimately, why he fails. I'm trying to project moving forward. Is Judge a player who doesn't show up in the postseason because the postseason's too big for him and he's just not clutch? Or has Judge struggled in the last two postseasons because he happened to find himself in a slump and he slumps like everybody else? And when he does, he strikes out a ton. The at-bats are bad. He's susceptible to the pitch low and away on the slider, much like Stanton. Like, is it just that Judge gets into funks, or is it Judge isn't big enough for the moment? And the first one doesn't scare me as much as the second one, because the big moment's always going to be there. The slump doesn't have to be. And if he can just slump in June and look this bad, you got to just hope that that's what the postseason has been. Because prior to 22, he was a good postseason player, not a great, not a player who rose his game or was the same. You know, he wasn't the best hitter in baseball the way he's been for the last couple of years. But he hit a home run in every single wild card game outside of the Boston one. Like, he's hit home runs in wild card games, which are like game sevens. He had big series in 18 against the Red Sox. He's had big series, you know, against the Astros earlier in his career. The last two postseasons, 22 and last year, have been dreadful. And for me, just looking at it, saying, hey, last April he was this bad. Hey, right now, just in a 3-week, 2.5-week stretch, he can get into a funk and strike out a ton. Hopefully that's the answer. The answer is he had 4 days off leading into the ALDS. He got into some bad habits and was just in a slump. And we're seeing he can look pretty awful. It doesn't have to be the most impactful, most important, most scrutinized, biggest moments, Yankee legacy defining games. It can just be a game in June against Cincinnati. And hopefully that's the reason he's struggled in the past. And hopefully that will be the reason why he can find himself come postseason time, and it won't be anything that kills him. 888-808-1019. And before we get to the top, let's talk a little bit of the Knicks and Nets real quick. We have a few minutes before the update at the top. Let's start with the Knicks and the coaching search, as they have now added another name to the search, the assistant coach of the Pelicans, Borrego. He was the head coach of the Charlotte Hornets for a little bit, so he's got some coaching experience. It's just another name. These are the names that don't bother me, especially now that the search is wide open. I talked about this yesterday. When you look at a Nori, you look at, you know, this guy Borrego, when you look at these coaches, like, these are the guys you talk to. You talk to the assistant coaches, especially specifically, like, you know, Carl Anthony Towns had a connection to Nori. Like, that, it makes sense to me. It makes sense to me. And then you came out, you heard earlier in the day, the list of all the things they're looking for in the next head coach, and it's pretty much all of the failings. You know, player development, rotation, trusting the younger players, you know, listening to your coaching staff. Bondi wrote a report for the Post about all the things the Knicks are looking for, and it's, you know, it's a typical, you know, in other words, the name of the story should have been the things we thought Tibbs didn't do well. I mean, that's pretty much, that's what that article was. It wasn't like, hey, these are what we're prioritizing. It's like, hey, these are the things we didn't think Tibbs did well. But they're singularly focused on winning a championship and winning games, and Tibbs did that pretty damn well. Not a championship, but he won a lot of games. But yeah, no, all the things that Tibbs isn't good at, those are the things they're specifically looking at. And we'll see if these guys are, Nori and Borrego, the type of coaches who do those things, we'll see. But as the coaching search continues, the one thing we heard today at the draft, Nico Harrison, the president of basketball operations, or the highest basketball executive for the Dallas Mavericks, the famed Nico Harrison who traded away Luka Doncic, made it a very, you know, he didn't pound the table while he said it, but he did say it. Jason Kidd's going nowhere. Jason Kidd is going to be the head coach of this Dallas team. And that comes with reports again. We saw it a couple weeks ago. We saw it again 2 days ago. We're seeing it again yesterday. Reports that Jason Kidd wants the Knick job. Now, I don't know if that's true. Nico Harrison did come out and say it publicly that he's not going anywhere. Cooper Flagg was asked in his post-draft interview if he's talked to Jason Kidd. And he said, no, I haven't had any of those conversations yet. So I don't know where Jason Kidd's head is at. I don't know how difficult he could make this for Nico Harrison. But right now, the Mavericks are adamant that he is not leaving. He is not coaching anywhere else but in Dallas. And as much as that still feels like what the Knicks want, what Jason Kidd wants, they have to be willing to do it. And Dallas right now does not sound like it. So the coaching search continues for the New York Knicks. And then you get to the Brooklyn Nets, who I'm confused on what they did here. Like, I understand accruing and trading for and acquiring five first-round picks, right? No team has ever had five first-round picks. And now you had to have believed, if you're a Nets fan, if you're just a basketball fan, as we saw a bunch of different trade flurries that happened throughout the early parts of this offseason and into the draft last night. Like, this draft hasn't been classified as an overly deep or really great draft. And there are some thoughts that maybe next year's draft could be, you know, is going to be better. Like, what are you doing with five picks? And they draft three point guards from overseas. Like, I just, it's hard to see the vision. Like, what they draft three of similar players here. And look, I'll be the first to tell you, I certainly don't know the international guys all that well. And, you know, I watch some college basketball. I'm not the biggest college basketball guy. I can't tell you, like, we don't know. It's the draft. We all say this about the NFL draft, certainly the MLB draft. We don't even know what's happening. The NHL draft. Like, I don't know if these players are going to be any good, but what are you going to do on a 15 roster team with five first round picks, three point guards who I'm reading reports on? The big problem is a lot of them can't shoot. They've got size, they can defend, they can penetrate, but they can't shoot. Have you watched the NBA lately? And to me, when you acquire first-round picks, the point isn't to take all five. I mean, it's an interesting concept, and you hope two out of the five stick. I heard Evan talking about it today, is that was one of the options, and I was like, they're not going to take all five. They're going to move some of them into next year or do something. You're going to have five first-round picks on your team next year? Five? A quarter of your roster. A third of your roster, rather. Is going to be first-round picks from this year? To me, this is now, it feels, they are in for the long haul. Like, that's, it feels like they, like, I understand trading for a superstar felt like a stretch, and the idea they were going to get one of these studs, you know, a Giannis or whatever, felt like a stretch. But I mean, if you're not going to try and move some of these picks with teams and hope to get better, higher draft picks next year or something, do something with these picks. Like, this just it feels like they're just in for the long, long rebuild, and hopefully a couple of these guys pan out. Maybe they can move some of them later. I don't know. I am shocked they took all five and didn't move any. I am shocked. It just doesn't seem like a smart allocation of resources to draft all these guys at the back end of the first round. Now, they were showing it in the broadcast. Sure, there's a handful of great players. You know, Siakam was one that jumped out at me that I remember them going through late first round picks that have turned out to be great players. We've seen second round picks, like, right, you know, the best player in the NBA right now, arguably in Jokic, it was a second-round pick. So it's just because you're taking them at the back end of the first doesn't mean they can't be really good players, but you want lottery picks. And to just take five guys, three point guards, three, you know, international point guards, it feels like a lot of, you know, the same type of player, clearly, and just, I don't know what they're doing. I don't know what the thought process is taking all five. I would have thought for sure the Nets were going to trade away a couple of these draft picks, for sure. Include them in something, do something with them, include them in three-team deals. Like, we saw a bunch of wheeling and dealing, and the Nets just sat there and took five players. This isn't the NFL draft. You're not trying to fill out the special teams. You don't have a 53-man roster. So we'll see how it works. It was an interesting draft, to say the least, from the Brooklyn Nets. 888-808-1019. The Knicks head coaching search. A couple other things. Do you ever remember, like, Bailey's looking to get to the team? He gets drafted by Utah. I forget his name now. They have it on camera. Fleeks, do you remember his name? The Raptors. The Raptors draft pick is on camera looking furious. He got, like, do you ever remember as many players like try, like, it happens every once in a while, like John Elway, obviously, and Manning, and but like these guys are all something Murray Boyles, what was that? Colin Murray Boyles. He gets drafted by the Toronto Raptors. If you haven't seen the video, it's all over Twitter. He gets drafted by the Raptors. He like stands up. Now, again, I can't be in his mind, and who knows why he did it, but he stands up, he looks like he shakes his head, and then drops the F-bomb. Like he's not happy he's going to Toronto. These guys, you just got drafted in the first round, and you're endearing yourself to the fan base by making it look like you're freaking miserable. You got sent to Toronto.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.